This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo, episode 48. Coming up on today's show, the bogus whistleblower, New York 27, all that and more on the way on Still Standing.
No talking points, no spin, it's politics you can't put down. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo.
Hello, it's Still Standing with Michael Caputo, episode 48. Thanks a lot for tuning in. So much is going down right now. So much is happening. This whole whistleblower thing, I have a lot to say about that, of course. We are looking at Russia 2.0. That's exactly what this is. In fact, the Democrats rode the Russia hoax like a horse all the way into the ground, killed it dead, jumped off, and instead of getting another horse, they've decided to just buy a new pair of spurs and dig into this dead horse, which to me is, honestly, I think this is a terrible strategy on the Democrats' behalf. I think that whoever's decided that this is it is pretty stupid. Ever since November 2018, when the Democrats won the House of Representatives, I've known since then, and everyone who had a brain knew since then, that the Democrats were going to impeach Donald Trump. It was part of the strategy from the very beginning. We know that because we've read the text messages between Peter Strzok and his lover, Lisa Page, the two FBI, I guess FBI agent, FBI attorney, who were texting each other, blushing in their text about how they were going to try so hard to defeat Donald Trump. And at one point, I think it was Page or Strzok, whoever, it's hard to sort them out, said that this was going to be an investigation leading to impeachment with a question mark. That's exactly what we have, of course. And from my perspective, this has been coming since November of 2018. And frankly, because it was trying so hard to defeat Donald Trump at the polls in 2018 and take over the House of Representatives, I think impeachment was on the docket since Strzok and Page were talking about it in the summer of 2016. But frankly, now that we have an impeachment that was a result of an investigation, it's interesting to see that the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, the timing of what she did, I don't think it was smart. I think she's got real problems now. She got stuck with a pig in a poke when she declared the beginning of the impeachment inquiry. The president had a meeting scheduled with President Zelensky of Ukraine, a long planned meeting at the United Nations General Assembly. I was actually at the United Nations General Assembly last week, and that meeting with Zelensky had been on the docket for a long time. And when you're thinking about announcing a major program, a major policy, a major news item, a major tactic, a major strategy against the president of the United States, you look around and you see what else is happening. What day of the week is it? What other competing bills are on the floor of the House? What other news might come up? You know for a fact that the president is speaking to Zelensky in 48 hours after, or 36 hours after you're intending to make the announcement. You want to make the announcement about the impeachment. But that didn't seem to bother Nancy Pelosi. The meeting between the two presidents of the nations that she was concerned about and wringing her hands about when she announced the impeachment, those two presidents were scheduled to meet, but her announcement was more important, I guess. Because if you looked at it, the Zelensky-Trump meeting made, I think, mincemeat of the speaker's impeachment inquiry. In fact, if I were the speaker and I had waited until Zelensky and Trump had had their meeting, I think I would have waited, if I were her, until there was more meat on that bone. And of course, it was right after her announcement that she was going to be in all in for impeachment that Donald Trump released the summary of his call with Zelensky. And it proved, you know, that a lot of the leaks about this call were incorrect. And then they leaked the president released the whistleblower's actual seven-page. If you read that seven-page whistleblowing report, you know that there was more than one person involved in filing that report. It reads like it comes from the House Representatives Intelligence Committee. And in fact, if you read all the stuff that comes from Intel, you notice a certain kind of writing style here. It's almost as if it was written by the staff at the House Intelligence Committee. We know that before it was announced publicly that there was a whistleblower complaint, that House Intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff was tweeting about it. He couldn't resist talking about it with the public. He had a tweet that he just had to share. And in that tweet, he actually made it very well known that he had already seen this whistleblower report. So was the House Intelligence Committee involved in drafting it? We know that the House Intelligence Chairman knew about it before it was publicly available, publicly announced anyway, and before the leak of it anyway. So what is the exact involvement of Schiff in the House of Representatives? Of course, now we also know, thanks to some great reporting, that the form that the whistleblower had to fill out was changed. Yeah, it was actually changed quietly. The form for a whistleblower to fill out made it very clear that it had to be firsthand information, couldn't be hearsay, something someone had heard from someone. That would make this a matter of urgency. And the original form made that very clear, but the form that was filled out by the whistleblower didn't have that stipulation that it had to be firsthand information. Somebody in the intelligence community had changed it. Somebody had gotten in there, changed it, and did not, by the way, change the metadata tags that show when the document was made, which is pretty funny since they're supposed to be spies, right? But if you can't change the metadata on a fake document we put together, then maybe you ought to not be in the spy business. But we know they changed that. We want to find out when. We don't know exactly when. The metadata can only tell us so much. But we know they changed that form in order to allow for a whistleblower that had no firsthand information. We know also that the whistleblower is CIA. I could have told you that without any information from the news media. Clearly, this CIA agent was in there, had been in there, put in charge of whatever he was in charge of by John Brennan, the CIA director under Barack Obama. That's the truth. If this person had the kind of trajectory of a career that we are speculating about now, then he certainly served under Brennan. My friends in the CIA tell me that under Brennan, he surrounded himself with very liberal analyst types, not operations types, not spies, wonks, not people in the field doing what it takes to, you know, come up with human intelligence and signals intelligence, but analysts, people who receive the intelligence to try to figure out what's going on. Brennan was surrounded by analysts, not the guys who bend the metal, surrounded by analysts. And this guy was, you know, allegedly an analyst that knew a lot about Ukraine. If you read the report, then you knew this came from someone who had, you know, had analytical experience. So a CIA analyst is a whistleblower, not really a whistleblower because the requirement for firsthand information. This is actually someone in the intelligence community that was ginned up to do this and was going after the President of the United States under the guise of the whistleblower system. This is not a whistleblower. This is a leaker. Remember that the President's conversations with other heads of state are top secret material. There's no other way to consider it. It is of the highest classification, because the presidents of foreign nations need to have the confidence that they're talking to the President of the United States in a secure environment. So this person who comes in as a whistleblower, we're going to find out who they are eventually. They're from the CIA. We know that a lot of this activity that's been going on through the Russia hoax originated with CIA. We know that CIA Director John Brennan was out there trying to socialize the bogus Russia dossier from Fusion GPI, Fusion FBI. And we know that Brennan was in this from the very start. And you can imagine that Brennan had some of his people stay behind in the CIA so that they could keep the ball rolling. We know that at some point, John Brennan assembled a team of 12 CIA agents, all analyst types, who were digging through all of this Russia Trump information It's not clear when that 12-person panel was put together by Brennan behind closed doors. I really would like to know when that started, because if that started in late, you know, like just prior to the election in 2016, then Brennan is reacting to what he's seeing in the news. But if that started in May, June, or even April of 2016, then you know Brennan was actually creating intelligence in that group of 12 people, not just analyzing intelligence. So much of what went down in the bogus Russia hoax originated with the CIA. And we see this whistleblower, as they're calling him, he's not, comes from the CIA as well. This brings me to my point. We absolutely need a church committee. If you know what the church committee is, in the late 70s, Senator Church organized a committee to analyze and reform the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, and the IRS, by the way. We need a new church committee. The CIA has become completely partisan, completely liberal. It's ruled by analysts, all the good old boys who used to be involved there, like Kofor Black and Hank Crumpton, the guys who used to run a tight ship focused on human intelligence. They're gone, even though Kofor Black actually applied for a job with the Trump administration, didn't get one. But now we have, you know, I believe the people in charge of the CIA right now are just, you know, making, you know, the Brennan plan go forward. They're just encouraging it. You know, I don't like the present configuration of any of our national security apparatus, but the president needs to get a hold of this. He needs to get his hands around the CIA. If we can't have a church committee, a Pike committee in the House, just like they did in the 70s, at the end of all of that, at the end of the church committee, the Pike committee, we saw hundreds of CIA agents fired for spying upon Americans, for murdering foreign leaders. We saw hundreds fired. We saw dozens and dozens of FBI agents fired as well. And that's what needs to happen today. We have to gut the FBI and the CIA. It's got to happen. We've seen so much of this bogus Russia hoax, and now a whole new thing with this Ukraine complaint through the false whistleblower apparatus. We're not going to be able to stop this. This is going to continue. And now they've got this impeachment based upon the whistleblower complaint. I think that obviously they're going to impeach the president. They've always been going to do that. The House can't help themselves. This is like crack cocaine to them. They can't not take the hit of the crack. They got to do it. The question is whether or not it makes it through the Senate. I don't think it does. But if you're sitting around there completely confident that we're okay in the Senate, you better drink a little. I don't know. You shouldn't be completely confident. Remember that op-ed in the New York Times, the anonymous op-ed that talked about how, you know, people who were smarter than Donald Trump are controlling Donald Trump. We still don't know the author of that op-ed, but I can tell you in my heart, I believe that author is still serving with Donald Trump. And I believe the Senate is at risk because of the sentiment of that author. I think if you believe the Senate is going to fight for Donald Trump, let me ask you one question, a real important one, right now. Why isn't the Senate standing up for Donald Trump today, Monday, 4:55 p.m.? Why not? Why haven't we heard the Senate talk about how impeachment is a bust? When it gets here, we're going to kill it. Why aren't we? That silence is really deafening to me, and it should be deafening to you. If you think impeachment is going to be accomplished in the House, which I do, and you're completely confident the Senate is going to stand up for Donald Trump, I got something for you. It's called a little underconfidence. I don't agree with that. I think I'm concerned about the Senate. I'm concerned about far too many things nowadays. I probably have more aversion to suspicion around me after being surveilled for 2.5 years in the Russia hoax. I probably am a little bit more skeptical I'm skeptical in the Senate. I am. If the president can't replace the leadership of our national security agencies, especially the CIA, then he needs to do it another way. I've never been in the CIA. I know a lot of people who serve in the CIA. I've worked with people in the CIA. I know a bit about it, not a lot. I do know this. The president of the United States has one body that he can go to if he can't trust his directors, CIA, FBI, you know, etc. The Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. It's, how do you say that? PFIAB. I know they pronounce that acronym, PIFIAB. PIFIAB. The President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. You want to stop this problem we've got with the CIA right now? You want to stop this problem we've got with the FBI right now? You want to stop this problem we have right now with the National Security Council? Because you can bet some of the people that the CIA agent is quoting secondhand in his whistleblower brief are from the NSC. Don't forget, Obama tripled the size of the NSC under his watch and dropped the average age down to like 26. There's a lot of people at the NSC are absolutely beholden to and are sworn to support Barack Obama. I can guarantee you some of those are most of the people that the whistleblower quoted in their secondhand report were NSC types holdover from Obama. But the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, the President can nominate, let's say, Kofor Black and Hank Crumpton to the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board today. It's his board, nobody else's. And the people that he appoints there can actually help him weed out the CIA and weed out other agencies that are in charge of foreign intelligence. The President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, you nominate Kofor Black and Hank Crumpton to the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, this problem starts getting fixed. The CIA, the NSC, others are arrayed in opposition to Donald Trump. Now we have a CIA agent misusing the whistleblower statute on a form that was manipulated quietly by the intelligence services to include secondhand hearsay information, reporting on leaks from about a presidential conversation that he was not authorized to leak from four or five different people, probably from the National Security Council around the president, because he doesn't like the president's foreign policy. It's important for all of us to understand that it does not matter what the CIA agent thinks of the president's foreign policy. It doesn't matter what anybody on the National Security Council thinks of the president's foreign policy. It doesn't matter what anybody in the CIA thinks of the president's foreign policy. It doesn't matter what anybody on the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board thinks of the president's foreign policy. It's none of their business. It doesn't matter what the Secretary of State thinks of the president's foreign policy. God damn it, he better agree with it. Doesn't matter. What they think is not important to me if the president is staying within the letter of the law. And if you tell me that the president broke the law by asking Ukraine to investigate a growing scandal in their own country, then if the president can't do that, a lot of presidents have broken the law over the years. A lot. Because there is horse trading and diplomacy at all times. And if you are disallowing Donald Trump the opportunity to horse trade when he's on the phone with a foreign leader, it doesn't matter what you think of what he's asking for. There's no quid pro quo in this conversation, just none. And we heard from Democrats as they were declaring the inquiry on impeachment that the quid pro quo is everything. Well, now we know there's not one. And yet, the impeachment inquiry goes forward. This is going to lose the Democrats the presidency, and it's going to lose the Democrats the House. I've been expecting them to impeach the president. But over this Ukraine thing, I'm sorry, I'm not buying it. I know more about Ukraine than every single one of those Democrats combined. It's a farce. It's a farce, and I've got something more to say about it, but not on today's podcast. I'm going to talk in a bit about New York 27, which just changed over today. It's a big issue for Congress. We'll be right back after these messages on Still Standing. Remember, stillstandingpodcast.com. Still standing.
Please remain standing. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. Thanks a lot for sticking around. Don't forget you can sign up for our weekly updates. Heads up whenever something new is posted at stillstandingpodcast.com. You can give us a review over at iTunes, which is really helpful. You can subscribe to us there or any one of the other usual suspects. I'm on radio.com, which I'm real proud of. And I wanted to thank our producers, the people who actually have donated via patreon.com for stillstandingpodcast.com. We consider them our executive producers, like Henry Wotazek, John Seifert, Susan Havey, Sonia Carlin, Thomas Fulton, Darcy Swenson, our executive producers, Daniel Markey, Stephen Flaminio, Samantha Lynn, Rachel, Brian Pizdursky, Susan Stevens, Jack Bromwich. Also executive producers, Jordan Gostomski, Julie and Patty Freeling, Bill Grant, Greg Mumbach, my old pal Mark Berry, and Gary Stokes. Yeah, a lot's going down. And, you know, I come from a small village outside of Buffalo, New York, in the 27th Congressional District of New York. And it's the most pro-Trump congressional district in the state of New York and could be in the Northeast. I'm not really concerned about it. I like living in a red district, but I live in a really blue village in our red district. And we have a congressman here, Chris Collins. I actually ran the primary campaign against him in 2012, the Republican primary campaign for David Bellavia, the war hero who President Trump just conferred the Medal of Honor upon him in July of this year. But in 2012, he ran against Collins in a primary. We won 6 out of the 8 counties of the district. Unfortunately, the most important county, the county of Erie, where I live, the most populous area that's mostly farm country, in New York 27, dairy country. And but Collins took Erie, had a very high name ID in Erie, and after that, David Bellavia and Chris Collins became friends. I eventually stood up and started supporting Chris as well. He's a Buffalo, wealthy Buffalo guy. New York 27 tends to have wealthy candidates from the Republican side. The one before him, Chris Lee, was also a millionaire. Chris Collins earned his own money. He was a county executive before he became congressman. And after a beating Bellavia, we all became friends. And, you know, Collins was actually the first congressman to endorse Donald Trump. I had introduced the president to Congressman Collins when the congressman, I guess I introduced him at Salvatore's Italian Gardens here in Buffalo. Congressman had been elected to the House, sat in on a dinner that I had for the president. And then later, Collins was really quick, insistent on endorsing the president as soon as his first candidate, Jeb Bush, got out of the race. He had endorsed Jeb as soon as Jeb got in, thinking that Jeb was going to win like most people did. And after Jeb got out, he waited, I don't know, for the body to get cold, and then Collins endorsed Donald Trump. And, of course, after that, took a lot of flack for it, got on TV a lot defending him. He was the president's defender at all times. I was very proud of my congressman doing that. He got attacked a lot back home for doing that. I was very supportive of him, even though he wasn't my candidate. Bellavia was supportive of him for it. And then all hell broke loose when the president had gotten elected and had settled into his life in the White House. Chris Collins got nabbed for allegations of insider trading. Long story. It's not clear what happened with it yet, but something happened today. Now, initially, when he was charged, he said that he wasn't going to run for re-election. And David Bellavia, my candidate, the Medal of Honor nominee, a Medal of Honor winner, winner, that's a terrible way to say it, the Medal of Honor recipient, was one of the guys, jockeying around for the there's a special election, the county chairman, all eight of them pick who's going to be the nominee. If there is not a special election, if it's a regular election, then it's decided by a Republican primary. Six, seven people were jockeying for it. This is before David had been presented the Medal of Honor. And then Collins decided at the last minute to get back into the race. And all six, seven people kind of fell away. It was really a tough time for all of us, everyone. I was helping Bellavia at the time. But a lot of good people were looking at that seat and had made a lot of noise about it. And it was embarrassing for them to go back into the barn, right? I mean, they're ready to run. There's a guy out here in New York 27 named Stefan Mihailu, who's a friend of Collins. He hasn't stopped running, even though Collins decided to run again. Stefan has been out there campaigning for the seat, knowing that eventually Chris was probably going to either retire or leave. And today, Chris Collins announced that he was not going to, he actually resigned from his office as a congressman because he pled guilty to some of the charges, reduced or whatever, we'll find out tomorrow, for his insider trading charges. Well, the big deal with Chris was his son. His son had, it looked like, if you believe the story, his son had gotten the inside information and had sold his shares in this biotech because their, you know, drug had failed trials. He had sold his shares, silly, stupid. But Congressman Collins did not. So he's pled guilty to something. We'll find out tomorrow. And now New York 27 is coming back together. And it's free-for-all again. This is where politics gets real interesting. Real interesting. David Bellavia, my candidate, may run again. He may not. I don't know. When you're given the Medal of Honor, your life changes completely. In fact, I think David has much better opportunities in front of him because of the Medal of Honor. And if you think about it, it is possible for the House of Representatives not to be the promotion you're looking for. If David did get in the race, there are five others who have said they're interested. They will, every one of them, drop out. Every one of them. If you haven't gotten in and David Bellavia gets in, you don't get in. If you got in and David Bellavia then gets in, you get out. You don't run a campaign against Buffalo's Medal of Honor winner. You're going to get creamed in a Republican primary. Creamed in the numbers and creamed for trying. There is virtually no one whose name is in this race that would not back out. If David Bellavia got in. Actually, there's one that might not get out. I don't want to say his name, but if David Bellavia gets in and this guy doesn't get out, it's going to be a brutal primary that would, the kind of thing that ends your career, ends your political career. But this is important because here's why I'm talking about this. What happens in New York 27 is very important. It's a very pro-Trump district. It's important for the president to keep the numbers where he was at in 2016, where he is today. He's got to get the same numbers or better that he did in a lot of districts like New York 27. Doesn't matter. New York 27 is New York, and he'll never win New York. But there are a lot of very deep red districts like New York 27 in places like Ohio, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, that the president needs to win again in order to win with the coalition of states that he won with in 2016. It'll be different this time, but he's got to win all the New York 27s out there. And the one thing you can't have in a district like New York 27 or anyone else where the president is running is a never Trump candidate for president. That could be a Republican in New York 27. It could be a Democrat in one of the swing districts, can't say that word, that the Democrats won in 2018. Remember, there are Democrat members of the House that brought the majority to the Democrats who won in purple districts where the president beat Hillary Clinton. That Democrat now has to stand up and say what about impeachment? They're going to vote for impeachment. If they do, they're going to lose their seat. If they don't vote for impeachment, they're going to lose their stature in the Democratic caucus. So these Democrats who won the purple districts, which are supportive of President Trump, have a real problem with impeachment. Every one of these districts matters. New York 27, if you live in a district that looks like New York 27, in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Colorado, Arizona, these places that matter, forget about New York. We got to win them. The president's got to win them, or he's going to lose this election. Chief among them, Florida. And in my opinion, the president is in trouble in Florida. If you listen to my last podcast, you know that I really believe that the president has a problem in the I-4 corridor of Florida. Florida's a must-win state for the Republican president. Must win. And 100,000 pissed-off Puerto Ricans have moved in around Orlando, and they're registering them to vote. And when they do, we'll have 100,000 new voters, all voting blue, and pissed as hell at President Trump for no reason, by the way. What happened in Puerto Rico has got nothing to do with the president. The insurance companies in the state are ruining the people down there, ruining the economy. But he'll still be punished for it. 100,000 blue votes move into the Orlando area. It's a problem. We got to look at every single one of these districts. New York 27 is interesting to me because if David Bellavia runs, it's his. But at the same time, it's a real honor for me because we need more heroes in Congress. I don't think David owes it to us to run. He's run twice or three times, if you believe it, for Congress here in Western New York. And finally, when he can run and win, it's a layup for David right now. He could just declare everybody falls away. He won't even get a Democrat opponent. And he's the next congressman from New York 27. It's that easy for David. And it might be that it's just too easy for him. It might be that it's just too easy. That could be it. I talked to David today. He's got a lot of thinking to do. And I'll tell you, with impeachment and the new hoax out of Ukraine, the Democrats, I think, got a problem. And if we can put together solid candidates across these House districts that they shouldn't have won and take them back, the House goes back to the Democrats lose the House as well. They lose the presidency and they lose the House. It's all about candidate selection, and it begins now. Candidates like David Bellavia, others in great districts where we can win them back from the Democrats who slipped by in the last election. It's going to be very interesting to me. I think it should be interesting to you. I think the House is up for grabs with impeachment. I think we can really do what we want to do. I think we can take the House back with this impeachment. I think Nancy Pelosi is trying to put that genie back in the bottle. I don't think she wants to impeach anymore. Now that she just pulled the trigger too quickly. That was before the president's meeting with Zelensky, where we hear that, you know, from Zelensky's own mouth that there was no kind of coercion, no kind of quid pro quo. The transcript as well as the whistleblower filing proved that there was no quid pro quo. Now the Democrats say they don't need a quid pro quo. You know, it's like they will impeach this president for jaywalking. Absolutely, there's no question in my mind. For jaywalking. This has always been about impeachment since the day he won the election. Remember those texts between Strzok and Page, an investigation leading to impeachment? That's what we got. We lost the House in 2018. I've been screaming for 13 months this is going to happen. And here we are, impeachment. I say do it. Do it. Go ahead, do it. Because if the Democrats do this, they're going to lose the presidency. They're going to lose the House. Let's talk about this next week. I'm going to try and sneak one of these in next week as well. I'm back to weekly if I can at all, if at all possible. Thanks a lot for listening in. Remember, stillstandingpodcast.com, and you can help us out at patreon.com. Michael Caputo here for Still Standing. Thanks a lot for listening in.